Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate that you listen to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and also leave us some feedback. Rate us. Give us a review. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Struck me that like it's a lot easier to complain about things than it is to give props to things. So I can sit here and complain about food trucks or restaurant experience, and I should be talking about the positive experiences that I have, right? Nobody said that to me. I came up with that on my own. It wasn't like somebody was saying, you're so negative. I was just like, you know what? It's easier to bitch about things than not. Ben Golliver, speaking of good things to talk about, one of my favorite NBA writers, the national NBA writer for the Washington Post, and he joins us now. How are you, Golliver?
I'm good. Be careful, John, with sports radio, man. If you're just all positive all the time, your ratings, man. You know, your ratings. Got to worry about that now.
I'll mix in some appropriate bitching at the right times. Hey, Blazer fans are wondering, is there a move out there for the Blazers to make?
That kind of gets them over the hump or gets them out of this middle tier in the West?
Yeah.
I'm not sure that I necessarily see it. I mean, first of all, the chemistry does seem to start to pick up a little bit. I mean, I would circle Nurkic in the middle of that. He's playing out of his mind. There's room for him to do it. I think one benefit of having a player like C.J. McCollum, who's always struck a nice balance with Damian Lillard, is that he doesn't need to sop up a huge number of possessions every single night. Like he allows a player like Nurkic to be able to really come into his own and you know, arguably become like the number two guy on that team right now. And that's hard to find from a high level scorer, you know, a player like McCollum, you know, that willingness to take a step forward, take a step back. I think a bigger question then, is there a trade out there, is are they interested, right? Are they motivated to take on a deal that might cost them future money down the road? You know, what does Jody have to say about that? You know, what kind of instructions has she given to Neil O'Shea in terms of trying to make moves? Because the moves we've seen at recent trade deadlines from the Blazers, John, it's salary cutting, right? Every single time it's parting with this guy so we can get his contract off the books. They're trying to save money this way. And we've seen a bunch of younger players exit over these last few years under that mentality. And I guess I need to be convinced that they're operating under a different framework right now.
Ben Golliver with us, Washington Post. I think that's a huge question. You know, this impending change of ownership, the Vulcans, your understanding of Vulcan and Jody's interest in the team. Are there other cases in the NBA that you can think of where there was uncertainty around ownership and were they able to get things done?
Well, it usually winds up being a multi-year process, and I think that's the hardest part for fans to swallow is everyone who's got to step into a huge void that when an owner leaves is doing it really for the first time. It's not like Jody's been a sports owner previous in her life, right? So this is brand new to her. It's not like guys like Chris McGowan and Neil O'Shea have really been in that situation before where they know exactly what should happen when you're not dealing with the only boss you've had in Portland for years and years. It's a big transition. I mean, the Lakers went through it here, and it set them back for years. I mean, they got into some legal battles in the courts between Jeannie Buss and her brothers. They were fighting over, who are they going to draft? Who should be in charge of the scouting? How are they going to pitch people? Remember a few years ago, John, when LaMarcus Aldridge, the meeting went so bad with him and the Lakers that they had to do a do-over?
Yeah.
I mean, do you think that happens if, Dr. Buss, their old owner, was still in charge? There's no way. They would have had everything lined up smoothly and perfectly for him. So, that is an example of an ownership transition really damaging a franchise's status around the league. Now, it doesn't have to always go that way, right? But I do think it's incumbent upon Jody to get out in front of this stuff. I think she needs to be explaining, why she's interested in continuing to own the team, whether she has plans to sell the franchise, and what her vision is. I mean, every single year, Paul Allen would at least speak once, and he would tell us, hey, I'm interested in going over the luxury tax this year, or I'm not going to pay the luxury tax this year. I think we're contenders. I don't think we're contenders. That's sort of the bare minimum that I think an owner owes his fans, you know, in terms of vision. And I think that's now Jody's responsibility, and I wait to hear what she has to say.
In the Western Conference, you're starting to see the playoff picture crystallize. I mean, Denver, Golden State, Oklahoma City, the Clippers, Houston, San Antonio, Portland, and the Lakers would be in today. Of the teams that are outside of that, who should Portland be most worried about sneaking up into the eight?
No, you're right. It's really separated. I mean, it took a couple months, but we've got it. I only see one team right now that's outside the playoffs that I expect to get in, and that's Utah. They have not been able to put things together very well this season. Donovan Mitchell has struggled. But as Blazers fans saw on Christmas in that game right before Christmas, like when they do have things going, they're really, really good. And that's what got them to the second round of the playoffs last year. Their schedule is about to get significantly easier, much more home heavy. They've always been pretty good at home up there at the altitude. And so I don't want to guarantee they're going to be a playoff team, but I would bet that they're going to make the playoffs. And I think if you're Portland, the consistency factor recently that I mentioned earlier, it makes you think that you're probably one of those playoff teams too. I think if I was the Clippers, I would be a little bit more nervous about falling back to the pack. You know, they haven't been quite as impressive here over the last couple of weeks. If I was the Spurs, I would be feeling very confident because they've played just incredible basketball here for the last 4 or 5 weeks. If I was the Rockets, I'd be looking at what James Harden's doing and thinking, look, we're in for sure. This guy is going to carry us. So I almost think that, especially if LeBron gets back here in a relatively short period of time, that last playoff spot is going to come down to the Clippers or the Jazz. That's how I forecasted.
The Lakers, they're always going to be interesting with LeBron there. What does he need short term to compete at the best that they can for this season? And then what pieces does he need beyond this year that really elevate the Lakers into a true contender?
Yeah, they need a second star, period. They need an A-lister. If they don't get an Anthony Davis-type player this summer, I'm not sure that his championship window in L.A. is going to open, because what you're seeing this year with his injury is that, you know, we didn't expect for like 12 or 13 years that LeBron is human, but LeBron is human. I mean, he's strained his groin. It's going to be his longest absence probably of his entire career by the time he eventually comes back. He's going to need some high-level help because Golden State is just that good, and because the Lakers' young players are impressive when they get the benefit of playing with LeBron, but they're not good enough to really carry that team when he's off the court or when he's sidelined, right? So it has to be a huge talent infusion. I think that list starts with Anthony Davis. I'm not sure Kawhi Leonard makes a lot of sense as a fit, alongside of a LeBron James. To me, it's kind of like they got to put all their eggs in trying to grab Anthony Davis from New Orleans. I think short term, they did a nice job of plugging a hole by going to get Tyson Chandler. I think that they could still use more shooting around LeBron. There's no question about that. So they may look to do that at the deadline. But I think it's going to be a relatively quiet deadline for them. I think that once LeBron's back, they feel like they can be a team that competes with anybody as long as he's on the court. And they're just going to let that play out.
The playoffs in the past, I mean, we've disregarded kind of the early rounds, and we tend to not get surprises. Is there a team that you think, and I guess it's early to say this, but is there a team that maybe has been a surprise even to this point, like Milwaukee or Denver, that you think is a real contender?
Those are the two teams that have definitely been the most pleasant surprises. They're pleasant to me in particular because I thought they would both take big steps forward this season, coming into the year, but they've been even better than I expected. To me, Milwaukee is a team that could make the finals and is basically getting no buzz to do so. I think in the Eastern Conference, they love to talk about Boston and Philadelphia and even Toronto, and somehow Milwaukee's arguably been better than all those teams. And they have the best player in the conference in Giannis, to me, who should still be viewed as the MVP favorite right now in my eyes. And yet they're still not getting that buzz. I think that they're a really interesting matchup against Toronto because their offense can really just run you off the court at kind of any moment. And because they've got some different guys that they can throw on Kawhi Leonard to sort of neutralize him, I think Giannis showed in last year's playoffs that he can really wreak havoc against the Boston Celtics defense and just continually get into the paint and score around the basket. He posed problems for them last year, and he's even better this year. And I think chemistry-wise, the Bucks are just on the same page you know, more than the Philadelphia 76ers. You know, that big three in Philly is really impressive on paper. Simmons, Embiid, and Jimmy Butler, but you're already starting to hear some of the locker room drama about roles and touches and who's getting the ball when and that kind of stuff. And if you want to make the finals, everybody's got to be on the same page. You have to enjoy playing with your teammates, not just tolerate playing with your teammates. And I think that's the problem in Philly. In Milwaukee, everybody realizes Giannis is the guy. Everyone is sort of built around supporting him. And it's been a very successful formula this season. They've been shooting the three ball like crazy, getting contributions, you know, from up and down the roster. And even a guy like Eric Bledsoe, who was sort of a punchline in last year's playoffs, has really rebounded to have a nice season for the Bucks. So to me, they're the team that everyone should be circling as the, kind of the newcomer to the party. You know, they didn't make it out of the first round last year, but I could see them going on a very deep playoff run to the Eastern Conference Finals or all the way to the finals.
All right, so we're talking to Ben Golliver, the national NBA writer for the Washington Post, and on NBA.com, fans can get online and cast a vote for the All-Star teams, and I noticed that they let you pick two guards from each conference. Who are your two guards right now if you're voting from the Western Conference?
That's a good question. I'd probably go Curry and Harden. I mean, Harden for sure has to be the guard in the West. I think Curry, the only question mark is the health. I mean, when he's been healthy and on the court, he's been at an MVP level for Golden State. I realize that's sort of like the textbook pick, but I don't see a huge discussion there. Do you have different guards?
No, I mean, I'm just looking and I'm going, okay, you have Curry, you have Westbrook, you have Harden. You can only cast two votes. So there are some Blazer fans that would want to vote for Damian Lillard, but I can't with a straight face put him in there. And, you know, I start to look at that and I go, gosh, that's going to be an interesting fan vote.
Yeah, I think that, remember, the media gets to vote too, and the players get to vote. And I think ultimately the separation will come where Westbrook will be treated a little bit differently. I think the Thunder player who actually deserves to start the most this year, it's actually Paul George. I mean, he's been sort of on the MVP level, kind of captain of their defense, you know, really, really impressive work. And also on the scoring end too. I mean, he's stepped up as sort of their leading scorer, their number one option. But it gets tricky for him, too, because you've got to have LeBron in there. You've got to have Kevin Durant in there. You probably want to have Anthony Davis in there. So does Paul George and Russell Westbrook both get snubbed? I think it's possible.
You're the best, Golliver. I appreciate you, man.
All right, John. Take care, man.
There he is, Washington Post NBA writer Ben Golliver. I'm looking at it right now at NBA.com. What are you going to do in the West? You have Anthony Davis. Because you can only put a starting five together. It has to be three front court. It has to be two guards. So you're putting LeBron on. You're putting Harden on. Putting Anthony Davis on. So you have two positions. You either have Curry or Westbrook. And then you got to put Durant on, don't you? So you've got Anthony Davis, Kevin Durant, LeBron, James Harden, and either Curry or Westbrook. Really, really difficult because good players are going to get left off there. And that's why, you know, for people who complain about Damian Lillard not getting his due, isn't it not enough that he's a good player and he's in consideration for an all-star team? He's not a starter. Why do we have to always talk about people getting snubbed? It's like the Hall of Fame vote. People are like, you know, why shouldn't Fred McGriff be a Hall of Famer? You can make a case for him. But the same reason I think Harold Baines shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame, but he is that Harold Baines had a really good career, but it's the bleeping Hall of Fame. It's not the Hall of he had a good career. If we had the Hall of he had a good career, we'd be like the Trailblazers hanging 15 jerseys in the rafters and retiring everybody's number. Pretty soon, we're going to have players wearing like 76. Can't wear 77, that's retired. You have 76 and 78 are available. For the Trailblazers, I mean, it just becomes like, I'm okay if some of the players that I grew up rooting for aren't in the Hall of Fame. Are you? Because I think a lot of people are like, because I rooted for him and they're my guy, they should be in the Hall of Fame. Like, I think Edgar Martinez is going to get in. When the baseball vote comes to fruition, Edgar's going to get in. Mariano Rivera is going to get in. I think that class might have one more player. But there are some really good players that are not going to get in, and it's going to be a public outcry and people on Twitter and all that stuff. And in the end, I'm just like, it's the Hall of Fame. That's what makes it the Hall of Fame. You can say that a player is a Hall of Famer. That's fine if you want to say that. But ultimately, what defines a Hall of Famer is, to me, it's like, do they have numbers that match up with the rest of the Hall of Fame and accomplishments that match up with the rest of the Hall of Fame? Otherwise, the Hall of Fame starts getting diminished. Can't put everybody in the Hall of Fame. Can't put everybody's jersey in the rafters, Trailblazers. It cheapens it. Am I complaining again? You got the bald-faced truth. See where season 23 of The Bachelor is on. Season 23. That worked. Apparently the Bachelor is a virgin. That's what they're leading with. You know, sometimes they lead with he's a doctor. Sometimes they lead with, well, he's got a ranch. Sometimes they lead with he's had his heart broken. They're leading with he's a virgin on this one. We had a contestant from the state of Oregon who apparently didn't get a rose last night. Sorry, Oregon. We're out again. This is like the college football playoff. Can't get a team in. Mike's in Portland. He's called in. What's up, Mike?
Say, John, first of all, I think the college playoff is right the way it is, and I'm going to tell you why. I think that if you expand the teams, then what you're going to do is you're going to have potential athletes that are going to the pros that run the risk of getting hurt. And I think the reason that they limit the amount of teams in the playoffs is for that reason. And also, these guys don't get paid. So you can't look at the pros and say, well, it works for the pros. These guys get paid for that. And another thing, I think the two best teams played, but I don't think the best team won. I don't think the best quarterback was in the game for Alabama. And so that leaves grounds for conspiracy. I think it's a conspiracy when Nick Saban didn't make adjustments. I can see a conspiracy when in the fourth down, he had the two weakest guys trying to run and make the first down against a stout defense. So I see some grounds where I think one could argue that Alabama threw this game. I mean, I could see it. So I just wanted to put that out there and talk to you later.
Yeah, there's no way they threw the game. Come on. Sometimes Mike brings it. Sometimes he doesn't. There's no conspiracy there. Nick Saban's trying to win. His legacy's at stake. Alabama's trying to win. Now, you could argue whether or not Jalen Hurts would have gave them a better chance to win that game last night. I do think coaching was a major factor in that game. I think Clemson outcoached Alabama. All kinds of NFL talent on both sides of that game last night. And I don't think Levi's Stadium is going to see regular national championship games. The discussion on the television broadcast started with Alabama had to travel 5,000 miles to get there. And by the way, the ticket prices in the last 36 hours before the game went back up. They kind of reversed field and went right back up. So it was interesting to kind of watch that. 503-417-7575. No conspiracy theory. If you want to throw a conspiracy theory out there, let's throw a conspiracy theory out there that it's possible that we didn't get the best two teams. Let's throw a conspiracy theory out there that it's possible that the system is geared in a way, you know, the system which was set up by the SEC commissioner, by the way, the system is geared in a way to benefit SEC teams getting in and year out, a lot of propaganda. Like, I honestly think after last night's game, the SEC is probably the first or second best entrant in the playoff. Probably, but I do think if you're a Big Ten fan, you have a beef with what happened last night. You have a beef going, hey, wait a minute. Why weren't we invited to this party? Pac-12, you have no beef. Pac-12, you're sitting around and you have to go, you have to say, as a Pac-12 fan, that you got what you deserved. But I don't think you have to say that if you are a Big Ten fan. We'll talk about that with Stuart Mandel coming up. Plus, we'll talk about the Blazers' retired jerseys, the jersey numbers. How exactly does that happen? And who is most likely to get retired that isn't already in the rafters? We've got a great hour of radio still ahead on the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Network.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced
Truth. Sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.